All right, people. It's that time again. We're back. We've been on hiatus for a couple of weeks. Everybody's been having a grand old time with Christmas and the New Year's and holiday season. Merry Christmas. Happy Christmas. Merry New Year. All that good stuff. It's now January 8th, 2011. And I'm deeply involved in writing an appeal to the National Transportation Safety Board for myself after being detained by a branch of Federal Maritime Police, i.e. the Coast Guard, that has now declared itself to be a branch of military that can somehow administer civilian affairs, strip naval officers like myself of their commission, even as a graduate of a Federal Military Service Academy, and lie, cheat, and steal, try to connect them to Timothy McVeigh somehow, and all sorts of other fun stuff. I don't even know what to begin to say about what I'm dealing with right now, and I don't know how much longer I can last, but we have, of course, James Corbett from the Corbett Report on tonight, and he's been kind enough to set up an interview with Rosalind Peterson. And Rosalind gets into a lot of different issues. I'm trying to find the email that I sent to myself, me. And it's News with Views, I think, is actually where I found some information on Rosalind. And it's spelled R-O-S-A-L-I-N-D, Peterson, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N. And she's coming on tonight. Just James will get into this in his intro or right after the first break. But the new U.S. Navy testing program, which is a new threat to the Pacific, there's an article up about this that she had posted back on September 21st, 2010. But she also has a lot of other interesting, I'm going to run through some of the ones. There's Protect Social Security, How Safe Are Your Drinking Agriculture Water Supplies, U.S. Navy Conduct Massive Atmospheric Experimental Tests, United States New World Role, Low-Level Nuclear Waste Dumping Ground, California's Burning Secrets, Solar Radiation Management, Persistent Jet Contrails, Genetically Modified Foods and Toxic Chemicals. I mean, she's got a whole host of topic on here. Maybe we can convince her to start covering some of the stuff on the Coast Guard and Homeland Security, but our dead and dying trees, geoengineering alert and cap and trade money market schemes and carbon taxes, fluorescent light bulb warming, Social Security. One of the things I'd like to mention her, and hopefully James will remind me, is about Social Security and what I've discovered in my own situation about how they're targeting Social Security administratively behind the scenes with this whole administrative law judge program. She also has ultraviolet radiation warning, stop U.S. Senate Bills 2191 and 3036, Climate Security Act shams, experimental weather modification coming to your neighborhood, why your elected officials are not protecting your rights. This is actually at www.newswithviews.com/Peterson/Rosalind A.htm. And if you Google her name, you'll come up with actually a lot of other links. But right after the break, we're going to bring on James Corbett of the Corbett Report, our co-host, our esteemed co-host, and he will introduce Rosalind Peterson. He set up the interview, and we'll be right back after this break. This is Republic Broadcasting Network, your program In the Zone, host Lieutenant Eric Schein with co-host James Corbett.
All right, friends, we're back with In the Zone on Republic Broadcasting. I am your co-host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and of course here, as always, with Lieutenant Eric Schein. And Lieutenant Schein, of course, busy working on his appeal with the Coast Guard, but tonight we have a guest on the line. We have Rosalind Peterson, who is from AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org and CaliforniaSkywatch.com. She's the California president and co-founder of the Agriculture Defense Coalition, and she has a BA in Environmental Studies and Planning from Sonoma State University, and she is a retired certified California USDA Farm Service Agency Agriculture Crop Loss Adjuster, which is a mouthful and a half. But you can read her biography online at agriculturedefensecoalition.org, where you can find out some more about some of the other work she does. But let's see if we have her on the line. Rosalind, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. And it's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show tonight as a guest.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. And in fact, your name came up, I think it was over a month ago now, on this program. One of the callers was talking about the work that you've been doing to do with the U.S. Navy warfare testing program that's just been instituted, and a final rule and decision has been issued on that. So that's what I want to get into tonight. But I guess first, maybe we should start by just introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about what the Agriculture Defense Coalition is about and what it does.
Well, first of all, I was born and raised on a working farm in Northern California, and so I've spent almost my entire life involved with agriculture in one form or another. And part of what I did while I was going to school at Sonoma State University was to work for the Mendocino County Agricultural Department, and then later I transferred over and started to work for the United States Department of Agriculture in the Farm Service Agency offices, and then later became a certified crop loss adjuster, where I traveled across the California and we assessed crop losses. Whenever a rancher or farmer had a crop loss, we would go and determine the reason for the crop damage, how many acres were impacted, and how much his losses were. We would make calculations based on the crop and then determine what his crop losses were, whether it was from weather or other events. So I learned a lot about agriculture and a lot about food production in the United States, especially in California, from this experience. And one of the things that started to bother me is that the state of California had started initiating, along with almost all of the western states, weather modification programs. And when they started initiating these programs, it was without the consent, knowledge, or prior notification of the people of California or anyone else in the western states. And so I began to be concerned about how it would impact crops and what damage this would cause from these man-made experimental weather modification programs. So that's how I got started, and then when Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison introduced a weather modification mitigation bill in the United States Senate, which would allow more weather modification with no public oversight, prior notification, etc., I decided that I would put up the Agricultural Defense Coalition and all my research that I've been conducting since 2002. And so this site became my database website for a variety of topics regarding agriculture, regarding upper atmospheric testing and its impact on agriculture, and other topics.
That's right. And for anyone who is interested, you have a wealth of information up on agriculturedefensecoalition.org on weather modification, on geoengineering, on honeybees, on nuclear programs, on U.S. Navy warfare testing, which, of course, is the primary reason you're on tonight, but also Social Security and Medicare. So I guess the question is, how did you start to come across these weather modification programs?
Well, I began to realize that we were having unusual activity in the atmosphere, and some of the unusual activity was seeing jets leaving persistent jet contrails that turned into man-made clouds and white haze. And that began to be a format of knowing that these jets were changing the weather, reducing the amount of sunlight reaching the earth. And so I began doing research on those back in 2002. And I came across many NASA studies and university studies which were showing that these jets flying across the sky and turning our sky into this massive white haze and man-made clouds were actually trapping heat in the atmosphere and were changing our climate and negatively impacting natural resources. And I realized that this could really change and lower crop production because they would obscure the sunlight and reduce the amount of sunlight reaching the earth. And also began to correlate that with some other studies about rickets becoming epidemic in the United States and people suffering from health effects from lack of vitamin D and other health problems. And so that became part of my research and turned into my database.
Right, but as Cass Sunstein wrote in 2008, apparently it's a conspiracy theory to believe that sunlight is good for you. So there's no length to which certain government servants will not go to try to convince people that this is not important, but obviously it is. And people who are interested in that can find out more from my Geoengineering and You episode of my podcast at CorbettReport.com. It's also up on YouTube, and that contains a clip from our conversation, which we had last year on that topic. But tonight I wanted to get specifically into this U.S. Navy five-year warfare testing that you're going, that you've done some incredible work, really detailing and outlining on agriculturedefensecoalition.org, where you've got tons and tons of documents going back to 2006 talking about the warfare testing, and it's really potentially devastating effects on marine habitats. And so let's get a little bit into this. What are we talking about with this program? How and when was it initiated? What kind of process did it go through to get environmental approval? And what have you been doing to try to expose this?
Well, let me go back a little bit in time. Under the Bush administration, there was a revamping of the U.S. Navy. And during this period of time, the Bush administration decided that the military shouldn't have to follow environmental laws of the United States in order to do their practice and exercises. So over a period of time, they started to put in these five-year warfare testing programs, ranges. What they call them are range complexes. And they divided the country into these range complexes in the Pacific, the Atlantic, and the Gulf of Mexico. And on my website, AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org, when you click on the U.S. Navy section, you will find a United States map showing these ranges, and it's a Navy map. The designations on this document are from the U.S. Navy, and it shows all the island areas and all the areas surrounding the entire coastal region of the United States where these ranges were first drawn in and put into play, as far as each one having a separate environmental impact statement.
Rosalind, is this coming from the Department of Naval Sciences, or?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a naval officer, and at Kings Point, I'm an officer in the United States Merchant Marine, a naval officer coming out on special duty in the Merchant Marine, and the department that deals with our academy is the Department of Naval Sciences. And they're the ones who actually help train us on not only, you know, naval weapons platforms, but everything that we need to learn as a naval officer as well.
That's correct. And so
I wanted to ask you real quick, I just want to throw in and you can continue. Does this relate to depleted uranium? Because I know they were using that on some of the testing and firing ranges.
Yes, the original, for example, the Northwest Training Range, which involves Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, in that range, historically, there was depleted uranium used along in other areas, other ocean areas and on land. And so such a fuss was raised in 2008 about them using more depleted uranium in the range that they decided for our range that they weren't going to use any more depleted uranium. They were going to use substitutes.
Yeah, like the tungsten and stuff.
Yes.
Which is not, it's a little bit better, but firing the tungsten is not, because it's still a heavy metal going into the environment. But
that's true. So these Navy warfare ranges were established in the ocean areas and around the United States. And the environmental impact statements for all of them are online. At least 16 of them are online at this particular time. What concerned me about these particular ranges and reading the environmental impact statements was that the Navy was going to be using mid- and high-frequency sonar, new weapons testing systems, and that they weren't going to exclude the use of bomb blasts or sonar during gray whale migrations during or in national marine sanctuaries, marine reserves or exclude any breeding habitats or feeding areas where our marine mammals would find themselves at various times during the course of the year or throughout their migration. And they weren't going to protect any fish. So because of the number of bomb blasts, toxic chemicals, sonar usage, new weapons testing systems, I started to find out about all of these ranges in February 2009. And from that point, I just went forward with research.
All right, well, we'll get into some of that research after the break, but there's a lot of information, as I say, on agriculturedefensecoalition.org, so people should head on over there to take a look at some of this, and we'll be back to talk more with Rosalind Peterson right after this break. Okay, it's the 8th or 9th of January 2011, depending where you are in the world. And right now we're talking to Rosalind Peterson of AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org, my co-host, as always, of course, Lieutenant Eric Schein. And tonight we're talking about a U.S. Navy warfare testing program that has just been approved and is going into place that threatens quite a lot of marine habitat throughout the coastal U.S. So let's go a little bit more into some of the details about what is being tested and exactly what the impact of this might be. So, Rosalind, thanks again for joining us tonight. And tell us a little bit about what people like Senator Boxer and Congressman Waxman and others have said about the potential impact of this program.
Well, one of the things that occurred in 2009 is that Senator Boxer, actually seven senators, and Congressman Thompson and Congressman Waxman in California wrote a letter on June 19, 2009 to NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, with regard to the Navy's mid-frequency sonar exercises. And I'm going to just quote one paragraph here. They say, "In many regions, the Navy plans to increase the number of its exercises or expand the areas in which they may occur, and virtually every coastal state will be affected. Some exercises may occur in the nation's most biologically sensitive marine habitats, including national marine sanctuaries and breeding habitat for the endangered North Atlantic right whale. In all, the Navy anticipates more than 2.3 million takes. Significant disruptions in marine mammal foraging, breeding, and other essential behaviors per year, or 11.7 million takes over the course of a five-year permit. And this includes the areas of the Gulf of Mexico, the Atlantic, the Pacific. This includes the Hawaiian Island areas. This includes many island areas as well. So the Navy.
Rosalind, can I interject real quick and say something?
Sure. Yep.
To me, this strikes me as an attack upon the food cycle, the food chain.
It is. Oh, it is, because you've got not only sonar, but you've got bomb blasts, underwater detonations, and they list in the environmental impact statement the number of missiles that they're going to be shooting off. They list the they're going to be doing underwater constructions. They're going to be doing all kinds of exercises, including a lot of new ones. And what concerns me are that we have no idea the effects of the new ones. But there's electromagnetic weapons testing systems. There's going to be force structure changes. There's going to be guided missile testing. So the Navy has really gone forward and has really said that they're going to be testing weapon systems of which they don't know what its impact on our marine mammals and other the natural environment around us. And so our concern is that, yes, the Navy can practice, but the only thing we're seeing is that if you practice in every area without exception, in other words, no areas where the salmon are migrating, the whales are migrating, some of our national marine sanctuaries, the Air Force has a range in which they plan to do bomb blasts over the manatee feeding range in the Gulf of Mexico. And that's online. All of this is online, by the way. And so we really feel that some of this is not necessary, especially when you're talking about practicing in every biologically sensitive area.
How about a lot of this is not necessary? Because at some point with computer automation and even graphics, we've gotten to the point where one of the car manufacturers, Vector, it was the very first car manufacturer, this is a couple decades ago, to actually do testing, non-destructive testing of their vehicles, rather than actually destroying the vehicles like they were required to do by DOT, they were actually to do it all on the computer. And a lot of this stuff, with the power of our computers today, most of this stuff can be done on the computer with computer simulation without actually doing real-life testing.
Well, and also their test, you know, for example, pilots now learn to fly in simulators, and they have all kinds of ways that they can simulate, and I don't think that they need to have live bombs in all these areas either. They can do their practices and their exercises, but why do we have to blow up a 5,000-pound bomb? 2,000-pound bombs are going to be used in some areas. Not certain that all this is necessary.
I'm certain as a naval officer that a lot of it is not necessary. But the other thing that I'd like to say, though, too, and I'd maybe like to open your eyes a little bit. I'm not sure if you have heard any of this. But what happened under the cover of the launching of the war in 2003 was our Department of Defense, this includes the Navy, of course, was converted back to a Department of War, a Department of Offense. That's why we're in these wars of aggression overseas in the Middle East. But then they created a new Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security that was supposed to be, they were originally going to call it the Department of Homeland Defense. And they took the Coast Guard from the Department of Transportation, moved it into the Department of Homeland Security, and they're now saying that it's a newfound special branch of military that can administer civilian affairs. And this is coming from, it has to be coming from the Navy and the Pentagon, to where the Coast Guard is now seeking submarines itself and is deeply involved in the issues that you're bringing up. And I'm not sure if you are aware how much the Coast Guard is playing a hand in all this. But we'll get back to that when we come back. James, go ahead.
You're listening In the Zone on RBN with James Corbett and Eric Schein.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
This is In the Zone on RBN. I am your host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, with the host, Lieutenant Eric Schein. And we're talking tonight to Rosalind Peterson of AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org and CaliforniaSkywatch.com. And just something that I wanted to interject here. I know that obviously Rosalind Peterson has been doing a lot of research on this, so she's well immersed in this. And I know that obviously Lieutenant Eric Schein has the naval officer background, so I'm sure you guys know about these types of things, but from my perspective, not having really researched into this at all, I just don't know how unprecedented this type of warfare testing really is. And I'd like to hear from your perspective if this is something that's really unusual in its scope or breadth. And I'll leave that either to Rosalind or Eric.
The Navy has always tested, but I've never seen anything quite like what they intend to do now in the name of practice and warfare exercises. I think it's stunning. And I also think that, in other words, the new weapon systems testing, and I think that, what I'm seeing with all these 5-year warfare testing ranges, many of which, when you read the environmental impact statements, are really redundant. The testing is redundant in so many areas, the type of testing, the methods that they're going to use, and the destruction capability of warfare exercises and testing 30 or 40 or 50 years ago is nothing compared to what it is now with the new capabilities, the new types of weapon systems, the experimental weapon systems. It's stunning, and the firepower that we have is so much greater than it ever was when we practiced in years before. So I'm finding that that there will be no ocean area that isn't impacted as far as the fishing habitat, breeding. And so when we talk about the decline of our oceans already, and many marine species on the endangered species list, then I don't understand why we're why the Navy and the other branches of the military at times are going to be going into almost destroying the earth in the name of war practice. So that's one issue. And the second issue...
Well, I want to interject, too, is I just saw on TV last night, and I'm sure, Rosalind, you're aware of this, and I know you are, James, is they were covering scalar weapons and about weather modification, which was like using the scalar weapons to basically create a hurricane and guide it.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of energy that is being used, like, on these scalar weapons, I mean, it, you know, if you're using that kind of energy to create a hurricane that would occur naturally, and you're focusing it on the ocean, anything in a, I would say, a mile radius of wherever the scalar weapon is pointed, and that, you got to remember, they're using it for targeting as well, so it's guiding the hurricane, it's just going to have a catastrophic effect upon any wildlife.
And that's correct. And so the Navy, essentially, our warfare practices become war on the environment. And somehow we have to gain back control of this and say, no, this is unacceptable, totally unacceptable. And so that's why I've been engaged in bringing public awareness to this issue and talking about it and organizing people to protest and to take action so that we can protect our ocean environment, because we're talking about destroying our food supply and we're talking about destroying ourselves here. Through the use of this exercises.
It's almost like they're doing the same thing that they're doing with GMOs, genetically modified foods, and Monsanto and a lot of the corporations, that they're attacking, and because they're even doing this with, like, deer and other wildlife. You've heard of the I think they call them prions. It's some kind of an enzyme that's been attacking wildlife.
Yes.
It's either prions or prions. But it's almost as if they're going after our natural food supply. Like even what happened with the Gulf and BP, to where I don't think that was an accident. I mean, if you look at what BP did behind the scenes in going in administratively and changing our laws and doing things that they're not even allowed to do at home in England, and coming in and spending the money on that so that they could go ahead and get away with not using the acoustic triggers and more. And then this incident happens, and it's not just that incident, but it's also like what happened in Katrina, where they were pumping out the Ninth Ward right into the Gulf. And this is just not ignorance. This is just not negligence. It almost seems like wanton disregard as a direct and intentional attack upon the food supply.
Well, I think so, and I think all these weather modification programs are part of that same idea, is that we're going to so disrupt agriculture, and we're going to we've disrupted it to a point now where 50% of the food that we eat is now imported into the United States from other countries. So agriculture has declined a lot, and we don't have the surplus storage of food that we used to. We're pretty well depleted, and when we start being dependent on other countries for 50% of our food, that's a lot. And I think that we need to stop these experiments that we're conducting, because we could go back to supplying enough food for the people of the United States and other countries as well. But at this rate, and especially when some of the food supply is going into, in other words, putting it into our cars and automobiles instead of being used for food, this is another area that is a real disaster, not only here but worldwide. So there's many issues that are all in the same area.
Well, that's the thing, is that once you get into any of these issues, like even my own with the Coast Guard and it being militarized and saying that it's now a branch of military and Homeland Security that can administer civilian affairs, if you try to get into the courts on any of these issues, even if you try to get into the administrative courts with any of these agencies that have oversight, good luck. Because you can't get a day in court and you can't bring up or you can't, you know, litigate against the federal government, especially when they're doing things like having the Coast Guard as a special branch of military carrying on administrative hearings about, like, even the Coast Guard. This is one thing I mentioned before the last break was they're looking for submarines now. The Coast Guard wants to purchase submarines. So it's a complete push by the military-industrial complex to take over everything to where we cannot do anything. We can't provide for ourselves, that it's not just like the GMOs, the genetically modified foods, but it's to where, you know, if you want fish, you're going to have to get it from a fish farm. That's totally controlled.
That's correct, and it won't be healthy, and we're going to have other problems. And we're seeing the health problems already from what's being done, whether it's herbicides, pesticides, genetically modified seed, honeybee declines, bumblebee declines, and most pollinators are declining. So as we're almost in an attack on ourselves here, and I think it's critically important that people begin to know what's going on and, you know, in other words, become educated in these topics, because I believe that a lot of people have no idea, absolutely no idea what's going on. And the
unfortunately,
media does
yeah, unfortunately,
cover
that's
it.
Very true.
Yeah, and media
I was just going to interject. I think that war on ourselves is an apt way of putting it, because as we were talking about earlier, I guess it kind of is a ramping up to something monumental, all of this unprecedented warfare testing that's going on, the militarization of the Coast Guard so that the Navy would be free for offensive purposes elsewhere. It's all pointing towards this total warfare footing, which is affecting not only, obviously, the rest of the world with the projection of American power, but now America itself with the so-called homeland and homeland defense. And unfortunately, we see this total warfare just starting to take over the life of the nation, unfortunately.
But you understand this warfare, though, too, is it's the rich elite, the untouchables, whether you want to call them the royals or self-appointed royals or elites or aristocrats or oligarchs or whatever. It's them against us. It's the 5%ers and less against everybody else. And they intend to be the ones sitting on the heap when all is said and done.
Yes, but when they're sitting on a heap and all is said and done, our destructive capabilities are so great that they won't be sitting on a heap of much, because it's going to affect them and their children, and it's going to affect everyone. I mean, this, you're not going to be able to go and escape somewhere, because the problems that they're creating here are overreaching to every country in the world. It's not just going to be us. It's going to be all over worldwide.
Oh, I agree. And I think that they're absolutely insane if they think that they can release and have some kind of an antivirus and you know, issue some kind of virus or put out some kind of virus into the environment, wipe out a percentage of the population, and that they and their kin are not going to be affected by it. They don't know nature very well.
No. And you make these kind of changes, you're going to affect the food supply around the world. You're going to affect everything. So I don't know that anyone is going to escape. And, you know, people think, well, the elite will go live somewhere else and they're going to be all protected. But it's their water, it's their food supply that's being poisoned. And you see, the United States Navy, too, I don't know if you know about the CARE program, CARE, Charged Aerosol Release Experiment.
I haven't heard of it, no.
Okay, well, on September 19, 2009, the United States Navy and NASA, using NASA's Brant rocket, put up an aluminum oxide dust cloud over the eastern seaboard of the United States.
Right.
And the problem here is that they're going to be doing more of this type of experimentation and testing.
Yeah, but the problem is, though, too, is that when the Navy's doing it, it's national security and nobody knows what they're doing. When NASA's doing it, there's disclosure, it's open, it's a civilian agency, et cetera, et cetera. When there's a civilian agency doing it, supposedly, like the FDA or FAA or, any number of other federal civil service agencies, that's one thing. Even then, it's still hard to get information out, and a lot of it isn't released for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But when you get the military involved, good luck. I mean, good luck trying to find out the truth and what's really going on.
Yeah, but they came out, they were pretty public about it. And the Navy more and more, even on the Navy websites now, are coming up and talking about their new experimental weapon systems and using electromagnetic weapon systems and testing them. So they're so emboldened now at this point that they really believe that they can go public. In other words, without any problem at all, that they're not answerable to anybody, and even if the public knows, they think that they're impervious to having any type of constraints upon them.
Yeah, or oversight or inquiry or congressmen and senators who are not completely conflicted, you know, by being somehow involved. Like even the recent Coast Guard commandant who just stepped down, he was named the National Incident Commander for the BP incident. He's now working for the RAND Corporation. Admiral Loy, who was the Coast Guard commandant several before him, Collins was in between. Loy is working for Lockheed Martin.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Absolutely. Well, they're interconnected. In other words, they just move from one venue to the other.
Right.
At this particular point. Go ahead.
I was going to say it's the military-industrial congressional complex, and that is the one key ingredient that Eisenhower cited and most people leave out, is that it's a military-industrial congressional. And you could throw in the religious, you know, whatever, because it's all part of the same. It's basically large corporation, large government, large labor, large business.
Banking and finance.
Exactly. All hand in hand against everybody else.
Unfortunately, true. And I think one indication of just the incredible types of disruption of marine and other ecospheres that we can see is what's been happening with the mass bird and fish die-offs lately. And I have no idea what's really going on there, but it's just one example of how we don't really know what's happening on a type of ecosystem level, and just how disruptions can cause these types of incredibly bizarre effects that just really no one's able to really adequately explain, or not that I've seen so far.
But you also saw that, like with the bee die-off and the problems with that, they came out, it was military scientists who were operating in Homeland Security somehow, who were the ones that came out and said that I think it was a virus and some kind of fungus that when they were separate and apart, it wouldn't hurt the bees, but the combined effect of the two, I'm not sure, I think it was a virus and a fungus or some kind of a chemical and a fungus, that when combined, this is what is causing the die-off on the bees, the honeybees. But to me, what's disturbing, besides what's going on with the honeybees, is that you have military scientists operating in Homeland Security. That's disturbing enough to me.
Well, yes, but you see, our universities and our scientists at the universities are being co-opted into becoming a handmaiden of the military due to the grants and the funding that they get for various research projects. And see, I don't trust this latest report that came out about the honeybee decline, because we do know that Bayer Crop Science is producing neonicotinoid chemicals, which definitely, even in their own labels, and you can look this up on my website, because I put the labels up on my website, say that their chemicals affect the honeybees. And we know that a lot of beekeepers won't put their bees now into areas where there's genetically modified foods, crops, because their honeybees won't survive there either. So I don't necessarily believe that the military and some scientists are necessarily going to find a solution that is the real solution. I think that they're in the cover-up mode sometimes.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, but my concern is that this kind of information should not be coming from, first and foremost, military scientists, period, and secondly, it should be military scientists in Homeland Security, because they shouldn't be operating there. If at all, they should be in the Department of Defense. So
that's
we split our Department of Defense into two new departments now.
Yes, or more. It's hard to know because of the private contracting that's going out, too.
Right, I agree.
It's really hard to know. And also the military funding at the university level is tremendous now. And so you've got these upper atmospheric tests that are being conducted, which are of great concern to me as well.
Absolutely. Well, it's an unfortunate confluence of things that it's really difficult to pinpoint, but unfortunately it's all coming together. At any rate, we'll be back after the break to wrap up. Okay, we're back in the final closing minutes of In the Zone on RBN with your host James Corbett and Lieutenant Eric Schein, and we're talking, of course, to Rosalind Peterson of the Agriculture Defense Coalition at agriculturedefensecoalition.org, and we have a caller waiting on the line. We have Jeff from Chicago, so let's see. Jeff, are you there? Do you have a question for Rosalind tonight?
Oh, hi there, Mr. Corbett. Hi, Ms. Peterson. Hey, Mr. Schein, how are you? This is Jeff in Chicago.
Hi, Jeff.
Okay. We're short on time, so I want to just urge the listeners out there, please go to CorbettReport.com, please go to AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org, and I want to ask Mr. Schein real quick, what can we do? I want to give $24 to your legal defense fund, because as you've talked so much about the royals and you've talked about the real legal and conspiratorial aspects of what's really happening, how can I give $24? And I want to urge everyone out there, go to RBN's RepublicBroadcasting.org, pay, $10 for 100 business cards. We need to start spending money with these honest people and stop giving to candidates, period.
Well, I don't have a legal defense fund. I need somebody to set it up. I'm writing my own appeal. They've declared me to be medically, mentally incompetent. They're forcing me to be my own attorney against a branch of military that I'm not in, never served in. I'm a naval officer, a graduate of United States, Federal Military Service Academy. My father went to West Point, brother went to West Point, my uncle went to Annapolis and more. I believe in and love my country, and these guys have been attacking me using psychiatrists, psychologists. They even brought in a captain from the U.S. Coast Guard, a medical officer, who testified in the proceedings on how I defended myself in court was evidence of my quote-unquote psychoses. So these people are evil. If they're willing to do this...
So my question for Ms. Peterson, for Mr. Corbett, I want to urge everybody out there, go to these websites of these honest people, give a little bit of money, invest, but Ms. Peterson, do you know of an attorney that could help Mr. Schein? He is one of the absolutely most noble hosts on Republic Broadcasting or any other network. He took a stand because they were so negligent they were going to blow up a ship that he was on. And he stepped in and said, no, I won't do that. And then this whole thing happened.
It's a lot deeper than that. I stepped into this whole thing as they created Homeland Security and the Coast Guard got moved. And I mean, I blew the whistle on minor stuff, relatively speaking. But now I'm blowing the whistle on what's going on with the Coast Guard, where they're saying it's a branch of military that can administer civilian affairs. That's martial law.
You're very powerful. Do you know of a lawyer out there that would help Mr. Schein? Because he needs formal legal help right now, and you know lawyers.
Well, I don't know if that's fair to throw that on her, and you don't need to respond to that, but anything that you could do would be appreciated, of course, Rosalind. And Jeff, I really appreciate you calling and pitching, and not just for myself, but their websites, and to get funding for these people like James and Rosalind. I'm going to throw it back to James and let Rosalind close out and pitch her website. But thanks a lot, Jeff. I really appreciate calling in. And
absolutely. Thank you, Jeff. That's extremely appreciated. So let's turn it over to Rosalind. We just have a minute or two left. So tell us a little bit more about what you're doing and what people can do if they're interested in this Navy warfare testing.
Well, if you're interested in learning more about the United States Navy warfare testing and its programs in all areas of the Pacific Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico that I know about, I have put them up on my website, and it's the agriculturedefensecoalition.org. My contact information is on that website. People can feel free to call me. My phone number is there. My email address is there, and I hope that people will contact me because we're working on several things moving forward to see if we can slow down or put this in pause for a bit so that we can protect some of the most biologically sensitive areas in the world.
Well, Rosalind, absolutely. Do you know Peter Phillips from Project Censored? He went to Sonoma University, too, I think, and then so did one of the guys who was doing the impeach with Bush. But good school and good efforts. I really appreciate what you're doing. James.
Thank you, everyone, for coming out again tonight. And please go to AgricultureDefenseCoalition.org for Rosalind Peterson. Thanks for joining us. And Lieutenant Shine, thank you as always.